Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views and the views of our guest. And this afternoon our guest is John Stormer, who back in 1964 wrote a little book called None Dare Call It Treason, that had a profound impact on the election in 1964 and led to the nomination, certainly, of Senator Barry Goldwater as the Republican nominee. And of course, the other side was furious. They didn't intend for us ever to have an opportunity to vote for a conservative again. But, of course, they opened up everything they could on poor old Senator Goldwater, and they lied and they distorted the news. But he still got 27 million votes here in America, and in large part because of John Stormer's book, None Dare Call It Treason. Well, of course, now it's, 43 years later, and John is still working. And he lives in Missouri, and every week he's up talking to the legislature there and putting on a Bible study for them, retired from the ministry, but still active, and he's written a wonderful book called, Betrayed by the Bench is the latest one. We actually carry his book, None Dare Call It Treason, 25 years later, and None Dare Call It Education, but we're also carrying his book and on the Betrayed by the Bench, and we have actually three videos he's produced, which are available. We'll tell you more about that later. But right now, John Stormer, thanks very much for being with us again, John.
It's always a privilege, Dr. Stan.
Well, why don't you tell us, of course, your concern, and I know one of your major concerns, is the betrayal on the part of the Supreme Court, these people who've been put onto the Supreme Court to actually change the structure of this nation away from the Republican form of government to, really an anti-Christian body that is intent upon disrupting the very foundation of our freedom, which really rests upon our Constitution. So you pick up the story there.
Well, really, I think that most of the problems that we're concerned about in America today have their roots stem from two places, the schools and from the courts. And we look at abortion and the spread of sodomy, the legalization of sodomy, the banning of prayer and Bible reading in the schools, the abortion decision, and even today the concern that we face rightly over illegal immigrations and the runaway impact that they're having on our nation, particularly out there in California and across New Mexico and Arizona. I think in the last few years, 50 different hospitals have had to close, going broke because they had to provide services to anybody that shows up at the door, particularly the illegals. And say, what's the Supreme Court have to do with that? Well, back in 1971, the U.S. Supreme Court in Graham v. Richardson, with Harry Blackmun writing the decision, and they decided that based on the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, that anybody in America has to have due process, has to have access to everything. They actually struck down an Arizona law and a Pennsylvania law that said to get welfare benefits and access to schooling and all the other things, that you had to be a citizen or a long-time resident.
Okay, you hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. We'll get into this whole idea of betrayed by the bench. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is John Stormer, who is best known for his book, None Dare Call It Treason, which sold 7 million copies back in 1964, and still one of the best all-time sellers, in the conservative movement. But John was just talking about, why we have so many problems, and was saying that so many of the problems we have today can be directly attributed to the decisions of the Supreme Court, and he was just telling us about the decision many years ago, written by Justice Blackmun, who hasn't been around for a long time. I think he's probably gone to his very hot rewards. But Justice Blackmun wrote a majority decision for the Supreme Court that said that, you certainly didn't have to be a citizen to get all these free things from government. And specifically, you had a right to certainly to health care and education, whether you were a citizen or not. Somehow or other they were able to twist the 14th Amendment around to give all sorts of people all sorts of rights that were never intended by the founders of this country, but really laying sort of the background for a socialist America. Would you pick up the story? Now, what was that bill, and you clarify, did I get it right, or what was that bill exactly?
Well, yes, it was a Supreme Court decision in 1971, Graham v. Richardson. Actually, it was a welfare recipient in Arizona who sued the Commissioner of Welfare in Arizona, asking the court to strike down the Arizona law, Wise law, that said unless you have a residency requirement, authorized. I think at that time they said if you're here 15 years, legal or illegal, then you could qualify. It was kind of like a common law sort of thing that. If people were living together for so many years, they would be regarded as man and wife. And this law in Arizona and a similar one in Pennsylvania said that if you've been a resident fulfilling your responsibilities for a certain number of years, that you could get welfare and the other benefits. And the Supreme Court said no. That's a violation of your due process rights.
Now hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Apparently Arizona then said you had to be a resident of Arizona for 15 years before you had all these rights to all these welfare programs. And the Supreme Court struck that down, said no. They didn't have the right to say you had to be a resident of a state for a certain number of years before you were entitled to all the welfare you were sort of automatically entitled to it, whether you had lived there long or whether you were legal or illegal. After all, we're a wonderful society. The 14th Amendment was written to guarantee that everybody was entitled to being taken care of by the government. So pick up the story there, John. Was there an outcry?
That was a real twisting of the 14th Amendment, which was passed by the Congress following the war between the states. And it was written to say that freed slaves had rights as citizens. It was in response to the fact that in the South there were a number of states that denied freed slaves access to all the things that other citizens had. And so that went along and was regarded, till the early 1950s. It was applied in the way that the states and the court had established it back there over 100 years ago. But since that time, the 14th Amendment has been applied in ways to open the door to just all sorts of abuses of our system. And we're being destroyed today by welfare, by the demand for all sorts of rights, by people who, citizens or not, legal or illegal immigrants or not. And the results of of that 1971 decision is now coming to fruition in all of our states.
Well, of course, if you were to go into Mexico and ask for, you know, welfare and free medical care, they'd laugh you right out of the place, you know.
Exactly. I don't have the right here now, but a friend of mine sent me an email recently that said, how about adopting this sort of requirement here in America? And went through 10 different things that sounded like, oh boy, it just would transform America. And said, now, these are just the requirements that they have in Mexico, people who come into the country and demand anything. The court's decisions, of course, we have so many problems in America today that our listeners, I'm sure, are aware of. The problem with abortion, the divorce problem, where we've reached a point where half of the marriages are breaking up, and I was talking to one of our lady liberals in our legislature, and she was nodding yes. Isn't it terrible? Back in 1900, the best figures we have is that one marriage out of 100 ended in divorce. By 1960, it was about 3 out of 10, and people were getting concerned. And by the mid-50s, it was by the mid-90s, it was 1 out of 2, and this lady liberal, a woman concerned about homes and marriages, although she thought that the reason why I bumped heads with her regularly was that she felt that the state had an answer for every problem, and she was agreeing, yes, this thing is terrible. And then she said, but the statistics on divorce are leveling off. And I said, yes, Sue, because there's so many young people aren't even getting married today, that when they split, they aren't a part of the statistics. And she said, yeah. And that's just one of our problems, the skyrocketing welfare, the births out of wedlock. Today in America, it's reaching about 45% of the babies born in America are born out of wedlock. In our cities, the figures and some black preachers are getting concerned about it, preaching about it. And the urban inner city areas, in some cases, it's up to 70%. And that has caused all sorts of, well, it's had its impact then on the schools. If you have kids growing up without fathers and without the stable home environment where they're disciplined and taught how to behave, you send them off to school then, and we have to have teacher's aides in the classroom just to keep order. And I've been trying to get our legislatures to set up a study committee to really determine what does the breakup of the family really cost the state in welfare benefits, in the pressures on the schools, in all the other various areas. And my suggestion was that they set up maybe an interim committee to study it. Not that they can solve the problem, but my position was that if they would really develop some statistics that show what the cost of broken homes is, that we might get some preachers to face the fact that they need to start again just teaching what the Bible says about divorce and remarriage and the other things that at one point was just the general accepted standard. I was visiting with an attorney recently, and he was decrying this fact. He's a Catholic fellow, and he said, you know, when my wife and I got married almost 50 years ago, he said it was just accepted that once you got married, you were stuck with each other no matter what happened, for better or for worse. I said, well, anybody that really believed the Bible, that's the way they used to teach. But we've reached a point today where we have so many divorced and remarried people in our churches, and that's good. A lot of people go through that and end up coming to know Christ and decide they want to. But because of that situation in our churches, we have too many preachers, even in Bible-believing churches, that hesitate to teach what the Bible says about marriage because it might offend somebody in the church. And we need to develop the statistics and put the pressures on the preachers to do some of this. Children need families. We're to the point today where, well, I'm here in a suburb of St. Louis County, a nice area. We have two big school districts that our town splits. One has about 12,000 students. The other has about 18,000. But over 75% of the kids in both of those school districts are from broken homes. And this is just, then you can get into the court situation. A few years ago, the school superintendent invited some of us preachers to breakfast one time. I thought he was probably going to try and enlist our help to get a tax increase through. But his real purpose was he did the dog and pony show about a wonderful job they're doing in school. And then he very apologetically said, "Now, I hope nobody thinks I'm trying to interfere with your pulpit ministry, but if you would consider maybe that when the school tries to deal with a problem, that the parents could be encouraged to support the school district and work together to solve the problem." And my remark was, "Well, you're saying that." I agree totally with you, and you're saying that we're failing to really teach our people the importance of authority and supporting authority. I have a good friend who for the last 20 years has been a school board attorney, represents the one big school board here, and he's made big money because they've reached a point where every discipline problem they have, he has to sit in on the meeting and prepare the case with the idea that it could end up in the Supreme Court someday, because every time they try to deal with a discipline problem, the parents show up with their attorney. Now, back when I went to school, if you ever got in trouble in school, you were in trouble at home, too. But we've gotten so far away from that, and it's expanding, and of course, the courts are involving themselves in even the schools that are trying to do something about these problems that we're facing. The courts are getting involved and saying, no, the school can't do it. For example, since January, out there in California, the federal courts, first of all, in the Palmdale district, and the district court there dealt with a case where parents objected to requiring their children in first, third, and fifth grade to answer all sorts of personal questions about their sexual thoughts and habits and so forth. And the parents went to court and said, these are areas that our parents should be able to deal with. But the district court said no, and the U.S. District Court, your circuit court, 9th District, said no. The schools have a fundamental right to be the exclusive provider of sexual education.
And of course, we can see what a great job they're doing as far as our young people are concerned, right?
That's right.
And so we're going to be back here in just a moment from John Stormer. As we begin to explore the problems that are facing America and how many of them have been produced by our own courts, even our own Supreme Court. Well, John, you go ahead and pick the story up from there.
Okay, when we talk about the courts and the schools, of course, the schools have their own problems, and they're very real on the basis that the scripture says, train up a child the way that he should go, and when he's old, he won't depart from it. And if we see all this breakdown in young people, and young people get old and then they become parents, we have to look at the fact that the biggest influence on the lives of young people growing up, they spend 30 hours a week for 13 years in kindergarten through grade 12, and then they go on into college and get more of it. And if you train up a child the way that he should go, then there's maybe 2 hours a week in the best families, in the best churches, kids may be in a teaching situation for 2 hours a week. And it's an unusual family where they have formally 15 minutes a day trying to build their values into their children. We mentioned that Ninth Circuit decision that the parents don't have a fundamental right to provide the sex education for their children. And after the Ninth Circuit made that decision, the parents went on and appealed it to the Supreme Court, and they rejected to hear that particular appeal, upholding, in effect, that the schools can do whatever they want.
And of course, the thing is that basically God gave the children to the parents, not to the schools. But
that's
there is
right.
This elitist concept.
But the schools don't have that recognition. A number of years ago, I was deeply involved in getting Missouri law changed back in 1986 to permit parents to homeschool their children. We went through a period for about 2 years where parents were threatened with the loss of their children and over homeschooling them. In fact, some people moved out of the state of Missouri. And I spent a couple of years working, and we finally got a good homeschool bill passed. But 2 days before it passed, we had a Senate-passed bill that said that parents have the basic responsibility in the education of their children, and they can fulfill that responsibility by, in the law we proposed, by enrolling them in a public, private parochial school or providing with an equivalent education at home. And the other side, they fought that, and they came up with their bill, incidentally. And in the providence of God, it was Senate Bill 666 that said that if you're going to have a private school or a home school or a Christian school or a parochial school, you can only run it if you get the approval of the local school superintendent. And we were fighting that all. And we got down to the 2 days before the session ended, and
hold that. You're going to have to hold that thought. We'll finish this story here just as soon as we the other station's on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and John Stormer was telling that he was involved in legislation back in Missouri to allow homeschooling, and of course that just before they got the legislation through, why there was legislation that passed through the Senate that said that the parents would have the right to get their children into a private school or into a parochial school. And then, of course, the people on the other side said, but they could only put their children into these schools, the private school, parochial school, if it's permitted by the superintendent of the local school board. In other words, basically, you had all these rights except that why the local head of the local school could take them away from you. So pick the story up there.
Well, as we came down to 2 days before the end of the session and had lined up the votes to pass the Senate-passed bill, the other side was fighting it, and the word finally came that they wanted to meet with me and another fellow who were helping on the home, on this homeschool bill. And we sat for 4 hours, and they were raising objections, and the man that I was working with, an attorney who was sharp, he could come up with a couple of word amendment that would resolve their problem and still keep our position. And we went for 4 hours, and finally, about 10 o'clock at night, I said to the assistant superintendent was there, and a couple of legislators, and the lobbyist for the NEA, of course, and the woman who was the head of research for the House. And she was the one that we could convince almost everybody else, and she'd always come up with some objection. And I finally said, "Now, Ann, we've been talking for 4 hours, but you've never really given your real objection to the Senate-passed bill. The Senate-passed bill says the parents have the basic responsibility and rights in education, and you won't be satisfied with anything other than the only right the parent has is to turn them over to you to do with them whatever you want." And she said, "That's right."
And really, this is sort of a platonic idea. This is the idea that Plato had, you know, that a couple of thousand years ago, that children belong to the state, and that's what the attitude they have in Russia, and of course they have that attitude in China. And there are people here in America who believe that the children belong to the elite, that they know what's best for your kids much, much better than you ever will.
And we organized the preachers and fought the thing out. Our bill passed at 2 minutes before adjournment on midnight in May of 1986.
Well, of course, it's
amazing.
It's
worked ever since.
And of course, John, it's amazing what you and a few other people are able to do. And individuals really can have an impact on the legislation. They just got to be dedicated enough to do it. How long have you been going up there to the Capitol and holding a Bible study every week?
I think that this is the 30th year for the Bible studies. We meet twice on every Wednesday, once in the House and once in the Senate, and have seen one of the things that we've tried to do. There's a lot of Christians there, and we've tried to show them that they and the Lord can be a majority, and as a result of it, some of the Christians who are legislators have been encouraged to stand up and say, "Just a minute, here's what God says," and it had an effect in passing concealed carry. And, the only anti-abortion bill that put limitations on it came out of Missouri and was upheld in Webster versus Repro Health back in the early 90s. And now, of course, the ban on partial birth abortion, which we passed here in Missouri and the Supreme Court upheld it the other day. So we have a good legislature, usually. I don't agree with all the things they do, but when citizens get organized and put pressure on, they can have it.
And that's really what we need, and we need people. I wish we had you here in California. Why, of course, that place up in Sacramento, I need someone pointing out that, you know, God does have something to do with what happens with the affairs of men. And maybe we ought to start looking to God and God's laws rather than what seems to be practical or, you know, one of the big problems is that they always are trying to do some good. And somebody once said that no man's life, property, or family is safe when the legislature is in session. Because there are people there, lots of times they just want to do something, but they never stop and think of the implications from the point of view of unintended consequences, or maybe what God's law says. Maybe we ought to think about what He has to say. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Stormer, and we're just talking about, really, of course, some of the things that they've been able to accomplish there in Missouri. And you pick up the story there, John.
We talked about just a minute ago the Ninth Circuit and the terrible things that some of the California courts have done to say that kids have to be indoctrinated with homosexuality and so forth. And some people would say, well, that's California. But a little earlier this year, just a couple of months ago, a federal court in Massachusetts, a federal judge, ordered the gay agenda to be taught to Christians who attend a public school in Massachusetts. And their ruling, they said they need these teachings to be engaged in productive citizens. They have to, young children have to be taught to accept and endorse homosexuality.
Hey, well, we've got a great VHS. It's called The Gay Agenda, and they ought to all see that. That was when I think I was a consultant in. I was a medical consultant. I got over 250 vulgar, obscene, you know, vitriolic, hate-filled telephone calls just because I appeared in a video and just said what was in a book written by a homosexual cult, and the band played on. I just repeated what he said about the lifestyle. If every kid saw that, they, of course, would have nothing to do with this lifestyle. They would be horrified by what had happened and certainly want to tell homosexuals, don't you realize that what you're doing is degrading to you and to God?
You know, we've talked, and we need to be aware that what's really happening in our society, and the way the courts have gotten out of line, is the result of the failure of the schools of America for the last 80 or 85 years to really teach young people what sets America apart from any other nation in history. I haven't been able to find a public school history or government textbook published in the last 85 years that explains that the thing that makes us different than any other nation in history is the concept of the Declaration of Independence that says we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And then the next phrase in the Declaration, the second paragraph, said, to make these rights secure, to make these God-given rights secure, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and John was just quoting, saying, you know, what makes America different than any other nation? Why are we different than Mexico, and then Canada, or the Great Britain? Why? Because of the Declaration of Independence and that wonderful phrase, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men with the consent of the governed. That is what government was about, was to secure our God-given rights. And as John was saying, he has not found a textbook written in the last 85 years that explains the source of our freedom, and that is we have certain rights, and the purpose of government is to preserve those God-given rights. And maybe that's why the Supreme Court wanted to make sure we took any mention of God or prayer or the Ten Commandments out of our schools, because of course, they have a different agenda. So you pick up the story there, John.
Well, and because those truths have not been taught, I can't find any record that there's good pro-life people, there's good pro-life attorneys. There's attorneys that get involved in cases like Lawrence v. Texas, where the Supreme Court found that we supposedly have a constitutional right to practice sodomy. And those cases are argued, and I can't find a record where anybody has gone in and faced a judge and said, now, how can you find this right to abort babies or practice sodomy in a constitution which was written to make God-given rights secure? The judges ought to have to face that. And that's an argument that's just not raised. And the good pro-life people. They don't know it, and they're not really raising that issue. And it needs to be raised across the country. And when the Supreme Court in Lawrence v. Texas found that there's this right to practice sodomy, people said, oh, my, that's terrible. That violates this and that. But if you're going to argue in a court, you've got to get back to the law that is the basis or the foundation for the court and make them face the fact that the law is a whole lot different than what they think it is. And because the people of America have not been educated, we're not raising those issues. That's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, Betrayed by the Bench, to try and re-educate Americans and attorneys on the fact that our whole legal system, when we established the country back there, was based on the common law, and the common law came from the laws of nature and nature's God, and they actually, there was a time when attorneys would go into court and argue the Bible as the basis for their position. And in fact, Blackstone, the English jurist, who wrote the book that was the training for most attorneys, made it very plain that if a legislature or a judge handed down a decision which in any way violated the Word of God, it was null and void. But we've gotten far and far away from that. And one of the reasons is, as I say in the book, Betrayed by the Bench, two academic theories in the 19th century. Hegel, whose philosophy permeated all education, that there are absolutely no absolutes. Try to make an absolute out of that. That everything is in a constant state of change. And then Darwin came along and applied those views to evolution. And as Hegel and Darwin and the concept that everything's in a constant state of change, there are no absolutes, there's nothing unchangeable, then some attorneys up at Harvard Law School in the 1870s picked it up and said, evolution. The law needs to evolve also. And they developed the idea of case law through which our whole legal system has been transformed. Case law, the concept of case law is that once a judge or a court makes a decision, that is the new law until it's overturned. And we hear that today when and I heard the man who's the present attorney general was asked, where do you stand on abortion? He said, well, where I stand is of no importance. We have precedent. It's established law. In other words, once the court has made a decision, that's the law.
But, of course, what they did is they went against all previous decisions, and suddenly they suddenly found something that had never been accepted before in violation of previous case law. So this idea, of course, of case law works only, of course, when you want it to work, and then, of course, they totally ignore it when they want to be able to murder unborn children.
Exactly. In 1987, the Supreme Court upheld a Georgia law that said sodomy was illegal and could be prosecuted. It was a violation of state law and God's law, and that was established law. But about 3 years ago, the Supreme Court ignored that precedent, came along, and handed down law v. Lawrence v. Texas that tore down all the laws against sodomy and other perversion in all of our states.
But, of course, what we really have, John, today is not law, fixed law, absolute law, the rule of law. We have the rule of men. We have, basically, if you have men who want to change our law, they do it, irrespective of whether there's any justice. And, I mean, who of us is to set out a standard, you know, how men should act? The only real standard we have are the Holy Scriptures that's been around for thousands of years. And has worked pretty well. And, of course, that was the foundation of the law here in America. And when we adhere to that law, why, of course, we had, maybe 1 in 10 marriages that break up. Today, do you know that in America, we have 7 million Americans on probation, parole, or certainly in prison? 7 million Americans. That's the highest rate in the entire world per capita. It dwarfs what they do in communist China, and yet the average American has no idea.
Exactly. Our whole society is falling apart because we have transformed our law. Now, law won't change people's hearts, but law will put some restraints on the evil nature and the evil desires we all have. And the common law on which our whole legal system was based did stem from God's law. And we have, I mentioned an attorney friend who points out that when he graduated from law school in 1955, and they were the last class that was taught common law pleadings, that you take the common law and go into court and argue that your defendant was right or wrong, or your case was right or wrong, because of the way it affected common law. But common law has been replaced by code law. We have the United Commercial Code. We have the code regarding marriage and families. And the ultimate authority in the old common law was God and His Word. The ultimate authority in code law is the legislature and what judges say. And that constantly changes.
Amen to that. Well, John, before we go on, I'd like you to, of course, get your telephone number and tell people where they can get, how they can get in touch with you, get your newsletter. And we do carry many of your books, but some of them we don't carry. So do you have a website now?
Yes, I do.
All right, let's get that information out so people can go there and certainly get your, how they would write to you and get your newsletter, which I always look forward to.
The legislature, my website is libertybellpress.com. Just all lowercase letters, and run it there with no spaces, libertybellpress.com. If somebody wants to write to me, I try to answer my letters. It's John Stormer, Box 32, Florissant, Missouri, Florissant, Missouri, 63032. That's the address, of course, on all my books. If somebody's still holding on to one of those old none dare call it treason from 1964, back in those days, we didn't have zip codes, and it just was Box 32, Florissant, Missouri. But I'd be happy to hear from anybody. And you mentioned, and we've talked in a couple of previous broadcasts about my position and my analysis of the Iraq Constitution. And I've been promising to have a newsletter on that, and I think that it'll probably go to press tomorrow, finally.
Yeah, good. And sorry for our listeners, if you don't know, our boys are over there fighting for democracy. And what is that democracy based upon? Why, Islamic law. In fact,
that's right.
It is the most incredible constitution which John has analyzed. And basically, you have all these rights, but they're all subject to Sharia law. We have established a radical fundamentalist Islamic state. We had a secular state where you could have Christians and atheists and Muslims and certainly people from other religions all living together peacefully. And now we have a nation under Sharia law, so we took something that was bad and we made it certainly a lot worse.
Yes, and if anybody's interested, I just have a mailing going out, incidentally, next week to many thousands of people who bought my books. And one of the things that we offer, we have some special prices on books, and we also mention in this letter the Iraqi Constitution and some of its key points. And I offer in that letter a free copy of, number one, my Understanding the Times, on the title of it, I think, is going to be If We Get quote, democracy, end quote, through the new Iraqi constitution, what will we really have? And we analyzed that, and we offer a free copy of that to anybody that wants it. And we're also going to make a free copy available of the 139-article, 31-page Iraqi constitution. And they should be available in about 2 weeks. So if a listener's interested, drop a card to Box 32, Florissant, Missouri, and 631-63032, and we'll get them a copy of that.
And give that zip code one more time, John.
Box 32, Florissant, Missouri, 63032.
And, of course, you can read every place you want to. John's the only person who's ever talked about what's really in this the Iraqi Constitution, which, of course, was established a radical a state under Sharia law, which, of course...
It's very cleverly written to appear like it's good, but then each good thing it says as permitted by law.
And, of course, the ultimate law is the Sharia law.
And the thing that I'm trying to make aware, the American government, the American media, has totally ignored this. They made a big thing of the purple-fingered voters, and they've adopted this constitution. The only real comment that I have had in the media, the USA Today, March a year ago, ran a column by the former editor of the Des Moines Register, in which he said, if the American people would know what's in this Iraq Constitution, they might rise up and demand that we would get the same sort of rights. Why, they have rights to a decent living and this and this and this and this, and never show the limitations. I don't know whether it's a socialist document, whether this guy that wrote for USA Today is just a socialist or he doesn't understand what constitutions are supposed to do, but we have a part of that information in this newsletter.
Well, actually, in the Soviet Constitution, though, you have all these rights as well.
Exactly.
But always under according to the law. Of course, the law is the communist law, and anything that they can give you, they take it away. And the difference with America is our rights were God-given rights. And the purpose of the federal government was not to give us any rights. We have these rights.
That's right.
To keep anybody from taking away those rights.
And our Bill of Rights says that Congress shall make no law infringing upon the freedom of religion and freedom of the press and all the rest. But the new Iraqi Constitution basically makes the Constitution subject to the control of the laws passed by their legislature.
And really, of course, that, ultimately, though, the mullahs really are in charge because everything does then come under mullah law, doesn't it, Islamic law?
Right. And their constitution actually says that no laws can be passed in any way contradict Islamic law.
And so there, of course, if you it's fine if you're Muslim, but, of course, if you were, say, to leave the Muslim faith, they have a perfect right to kill you because that is part of Muslim law. And where's the outcry from the liberals here in America that our boys are fighting over there to establish not a free society, but a radical Islamic society? And how many boys have died there for absolutely the purpose of establishing a radical socialist Islamic constitution?
I wonder how many members of Congress, liberals, conservatives, or whatever, have ever really, of course, the question would be how many of them have really read the Constitution of the United States that they swear to uphold, but how many of them have any idea of what this Iraqi Constitution really provides for?
I'm sure that they don't. I'm sure that they just simply are so busy, and that's one of the purposes. You know, they keep them so busy, they don't have time to read the legislation. In fact, I had a friend of mine who used to be in Congress, Bill Richardson, and he wrote a book one time that said, you don't really think that we read the laws, do you? And that's absolutely right. I mean, most of these laws, I never read. There's a law being debated today on health freedom. I don't know, it's 2,600 pages.
Right.
And who has had time to read the legislation? Nobody's had time to read the legislation. They don't want them to know what's in the laws.
I mean, we had a situation in Missouri years ago, the longest. There was a fellow, a very liberal guy, who put together a bill reorganizing all social welfare bills in Missouri. And it was 740 pages. And one fellow, Glenn Binger, who was he was a Democrat, he was also regularly introduced the 16th Amendment, and he tried to introduce an amendment. He did introduce the amendment, it didn't pass, saying that this bill can't take effect until at least 50% of the people who vote for it will certify that they actually read it.
We're going to be back here in just a moment with John Stormer here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest is John Stormer. John, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
We face big messes in America today. I frequently get asked, what is the hope? And I have to say that, humanly speaking, if we look at the power of the schools and what they've done, the courts, the news media, and what's happened in so many churches, humanly speaking, if we look at the power of all these things, humanly speaking, there is no hope. But there is a God in heaven, and he has intervened in United States history on at least two occasions in a very dramatic way and turned the country upside down and got us back on the track. And it'll start not because God has stood off somewhere and involves himself, but when we, who know him, says, the Apostle Paul did when he met Jesus on the road to Damascus, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? And God can go to work and work through us and in us to really turn this country around.
I have one of my friends, I don't know if you know Pastor Chuck Bismarck, but he says, you know, if we want to turn America around, we're going to have to start doing one person at a time, starting with us.
Right.
Well, I really want to thank you so very much for being with us today. And again, our guest has been John Stormer, and his book, Betrayed by the Bench, is certainly must reading for anybody, of course, who's interested in going on. What are the titles of those three videos that you have that we carry?
What are the dead communists doing in the world today? The war against our culture through the schools. And the third one is the Bible as the basis for the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence.
And, of course, it is, and that's one reason, of course, they don't want that taught in school, because, of course, they don't want the children, or anybody else for that matter, to know from whence our freedoms come. Well, John, thanks very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure to have you.
Always good.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
God bless. All right, fine. Well, I guess today has been John Stormer, and, of course, we do carry his books, None Dare Call It Treason, None Dare Call It Treason 25 Years Later, which gives you an update of what's going on today. His book, certainly None Dare Call It Education, and then, of course, his book, Betrayed by the Bench. And we carry several books on the Supreme Court, but without question, and John's not here, you can't hear me say it, but it is by far the best of all the books we carry on the Supreme Court, because it gives you that religious background that, of course, was the foundation originally of America. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and, of course, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you agree with us or are really involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological battlefield, and that there really is a conspiracy against God, and there is an organized effort to destroy the moral foundation of this society, then we hope many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And then, of course, one of the things we offer is a lot of the books that you need to read, or the DVDs, or the videos, or the 4-tape sets, and a good place to start is John Stormer's book, Betrayed by the Bench, which goes into the religious foundation of America, the Declaration of Independence, which was really, of course, the foundation for our Constitution. And, of course, then we carried John's books. And then they call it treason 25 years later. His book entitled Nanterre College Education. And then we actually have three videos that he offers, and you get them separately. What are the dead communists doing, the biblical basis of our Constitution, and then, of course, what's happening in our schools. And each one of these videos is well worthwhile having. Or, if you'd like, you get them all together at a reduced price. John is a wonderful teacher, a very quiet, unassuming man. He's just about as big as I am. Very often we would go to meetings and room together, and I miss having the opportunity to share time with him. But, of course, he's had a profound impact on the state of Missouri. I wish we had a John Stormer cloned in every state in the Union. We'd have a lot better country. Well, the material is all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, you have to understand the religious foundation of America to understand that there is a conspiracy against God, and that's what it's all about. If you'd like, of course, more details, you need to read my book or watch the DVD. The Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get our latest offering. It's called A Forbidden Secret. And, yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really is a secret. It's been out there for 5,000 years. It's been passed down by the priests and by the certainly the wise men and the prophets and the members of the secret societies, but never revealed to the public. And you listen to my talk, Forbidden Secret, you'll learn what that is and then what we can do to try to preserve America. So certainly Brotherhood of Darkness, Forbidden Secret, and then, of course, the two new DVDs by Chris Pitto, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and Riddles in Stone, both available from Radio Liberty. And then, of course, to put things into a little clearer perspective as we see what's happening within the music industry, why we're going to, of course, we offer, they sold their souls for rock and roll. They sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. 10 hours, you say? Yes, 10 hours. It's one of the most amazing experiences you'll ever have. The Riddar people, the key people in our modern rock music and heavy metal music, who frankly made a bargain with the devil. Because there is another dimension. What is going on is not imaginary. You need to get books on spiritual warfare or the gods that walk among us. And believe me, we're not talking about the gods of Christianity. There are other forces. There are other gods here. And, of course, many of them are widely worshipped. And they are waiting, of course, for the coming of the new world leader. They're intent upon bringing about a new world government, a new world leader. And, of course, a new world religion. And, of course, that is why they took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools. And who did it? Why, the Masons who controlled the Supreme Court from 1941 to 1971, because they worship a different God. So please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty. And again, our number 1-800-544-8927. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.